Montana corrections officials dispute a federal report giving the state a poor grade on incidents of prison rape. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce brings us the latest on the Flathead Water Compact. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with researcher Norma Nickerson about positive trends in Montana's tourism industry. State corrections officials are responding to a survey that finds Montana State Prison has one of the nation's highest rates of inmate rape and staff sexual misconduct. The inmate survey by the U.S. Department of Justice shows 9% of the 191 Montana respondents reported inmate-on-inmate sexual victimization from 2011 to 2012. Nearly 10% reported sexual misconduct by prison guards. That places the state prison as one of 11 nationwide with high rates of sexual victimization. Department of Corrections Director Mike Batista and Warden Leroy Kirkgaard testified today before a Justice Department review panel. Batista questions the methodology of the survey, saying it depends on a small sample of anonymous inmates whose claims can't be verified. He says gaps in policies and procedures have been addressed over the last year. And in other news from around the state, state health officials say a Hill County resident has died of complications from the flu. The Department of Public Health and Human Services today said 101 people had been hospitalized due to the flu through January 4th, with over half in the past 2 weeks. The Hill County resident died last week. Through the week ending December 28th, Montana had nearly 860 confirmed cases of flu and 65 hospitalizations. Agency Director Richard Opper encourages residents to get vaccinated to protect themselves and others. The virus responsible for cases this year is the same H1N1 strain that circulated in 2009, and the vaccine includes protection against H1N1 as well as other types of influenza expected to circulate. Several Montana hospitals have asked people who have a cough, cold, or flu-like symptoms not to visit patients. A committee of state lawmakers says they still don't feel they have enough information to recommend passage of the long-awaited Flathead Water Rights Compact. Tribes have been negotiating with the state and federal governments for 12 years to come to an agreement on how water will be shared on the Flathead Reservation. The Flathead Compact failed to pass the Montana legislature in 2013. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says lawmakers have one more shot before the area's water disputes go to court.
These compacts seek to prevent decades of legal wrangling between tribal and non-tribal water users. Tribes have the oldest water rights due to federal treaties signed in the mid-1800s, but they have entered into these compromises to avoid the lawsuits, to avoid millions of dollars being spent by all parties involved, and to find workable solutions with their neighbors. 17 tribal water rights compacts have passed the state legislature. Only one has not, the Flathead Water Rights Compact, a document 12 years in the making. A Republican-controlled committee in the 2013 legislature tabled it. Libby Republican Senator Chaz Vincent points out that while the state and the tribes may have been negotiating it for years, lawmakers received the final compact well into the last legislative session.
There's 1,200 pages of appendices in this compact.
He believes there wasn't enough time for lawmakers to decide whether or not the compact was fair.
And when you have hearing rooms split right down the middle and pretty much half saying it is, half saying it isn't, and not being able to make a determination, it's, you know, we wanted some more time to digest.
Governor Steve Bullock ordered a report be given to lawmakers before the next legislative session to answer whatever questions they still had about the compact. The legislature's Water Policy Interim Committee received that report this week, and Senator Vincent chairs that committee.
There are some concerns that were not addressed in that report, and we heard that pretty loud and clear.
He means heard that loud and clear from public comment at this week's hearing, which is still very split. Attorney John Metropolis represents the Flathead Irrigation District, which makes up the majority of irrigated land within the reservation, and the irrigators who use that land are both tribal and non-tribal members. Metropolis says all parties involved want to reach an agreement, but he says his clients do not support the compact as it is now. He believes there are still questions about who owns some specific water amounts. And the state and the tribe say irrigators in the area will not be losing water in the deal. Metropolis wants that information verified.
We really hope that there's room to talk further.
Metropolis does not go so far as to use the word renegotiation, and the tribes say that's not an option. Communications director for the Salish and Kootenai tribes, Rob McDonald.
I think the message always has been that this is done. This is, a lot has been given up.
Bozeman Democratic Representative Kathleen Williams sponsored the Flathead Compact last session and still supports it today.
I think the compact was a creative yet complex way of providing some solutions.
Yet she is also on the Water Policy Interim Committee and says if lawmakers want additional information on the compact, the state should bring it to them. She hopes they learn enough about the compact by the 2015 legislative session to support it, because that's the last chance for the compact to pass before water rights on the Flathead Reservation must be decided by the courts. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
A man who recently moved from Alaska to Montana has pleaded not guilty to an incest charge that alleges he was having sex with his 19-year-old mentally disabled daughter. KTMF-TV reports the 48-year-old man entered his plea in district court in Missoula today. He remains jailed. Charging documents say the girl's roommate called authorities after learning the man and his daughter were having sex and planned to get married. When contacted by investigators, the man denied the accusation. Deputy Missoula County Attorney Jennifer Clark has said the daughter has mental disabilities and her father was taking advantage of her. The Associated Press generally does not identify victims of sexual abuse and is not naming the father to avoid identifying the daughter. A second woman has been charged with misdemeanor assault for a fight at a fifth-grade basketball tournament at the Helena YMCA that led organizers to cancel the final 2 days of the tournament. The Independent Record reports 42-year-old Julia Northey of Helena pleaded not guilty to misdemeanor assault in municipal court on Monday. Police Chief Troy McGee says he understood that the December 12th disturbance started when a coach disagreed with an official and the scorekeeper and others in the crowd got involved. Scorekeeper Tanya Brandcamp of Helena was cited for misdemeanor assault and pleaded not guilty on December 13th. Helena YMCA CEO David Smith issued a statement noting that when parents sign their children up for YMCA youth sports, they agree to a 12-point code of conduct. U.S. Senator Max Baucus has refunded more than $1.2 million in campaign donations since he announced in April that he was not seeking re-election. Lee Newspapers of Montana reports Baucus' campaign account had more than $3.3 million left in the bank on September 30th. Spokeswoman Kathy Weber says Baucus hasn't made any decisions about what he'll do with the money left in the Friends of Max Baucus bank account. Under Federal Election Commission regulations, Baucus could transfer any amount to national, state, or local Democratic committees. He could donate to other candidates within state and federal contribution limits. He could use some cash to defray travel costs and expenses related to winding down his office. He also could turn his campaign committee into a political action committee. Some conservation groups are suing federal and Idaho state officials over Idaho's plan to track and kill wolves from two packs in the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness in central Idaho. The lawsuit, filed by Defenders of Wildlife, Western Watersheds Project, and Wilderness Watch on Monday, asked the judge to stop the extermination immediately to give the case time to work through the courts. Idaho wildlife officials hired the hunter late last year to begin killing the two packs. Idaho Department of Fish and Game spokesman Mike Keckler says they hope the reduction of wolves will aid the recovery of elk populations in the region, which have declined dramatically.
Our latest statistics show that over the last 10 or 12 years, the elk populations in this particular portion of the Frank Church Wilderness have decreased by about 43%. And there are several factors, but predation is certainly one of those factors.
Keckler says there are a total of six wolf packs in the Frank Church. Tim Presso is an attorney with the Bozeman-based Earth Justice Law Firm, which is representing the conservation groups who filed the suit. He contends the large-scale removal of wolves violates federal law and alters the character of the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness.
The whole point of a wilderness under the law is to have a place where wild nature controls and predator-prey relationships occur naturally. It's not about producing an elk production area for solely for hunting interests.
The issue of wolf control within a wilderness area will be the focus of a two-part series MTPR will air tomorrow and Friday. Tomorrow, News Director Sally Mock talks with an Idaho Fish and Game official about why they believe they should be able to manage wolves as they see fit within a federally designated wilderness. Friday, Sally will speak with an attorney for the conservation groups about why he thinks they should keep hands off wolves living within a wilderness. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says electric power generation from the Missouri River's six upstream dams fell far below average last year. The Corps says energy production from the dams in the Dakotas, Montana, and Nebraska totaled 7.6 billion kilowatts of electricity last year, down from 10.4 billion kilowatts in 2012. Corps spokesman Mike Swenson says more water was kept in reservoirs last year to make up for a dry 2012. The shortfall in production meant the Western Area Power Administration had to get energy from other, more expensive sources, and that cost is passed on to ratepayers. The Power Administration buys and sells power from 55 hydropower plants around the nation. Stevensville police are investigating ongoing vandalism at a local cemetery and are offering a $500 reward for information leading to the conviction of those responsible for tipping over 35 headstones, damaging some of them. Stevensville Mayor Gene Mim Mack tells KECI-TV it will cost the city thousands of dollars to reset the headstones and repair the damage at the Maplewood Cemetery. He expects the work will get done next week. Mim Mack says someone tipped over 15 headstones in September at the cemetery, which has graves dating back to the mid-1800s. Another resident says another headstone was tipped over in November. Research shows 2013 was a good year for Montana tourism, and early signs suggest another positive year is in store for the industry. This according to the Institute for Tourism and Recreation Research at the University of Montana. ITRR Director Norma Nickerson says Montana's tourism-driven businesses seem optimistic about what's in store for 2014. In this evening's feature interview with Edward O'Brien, Nickerson discusses these generally positive trends and the factors used to determine them.
Well, obviously, we want to see how many people are coming in. So we do that with our big non-resident study where we're looking at the highways and the airports, where people come in. We look at the activities that people do that are on our surveys, that sort of thing. But then we get actual data from other folks, such as the ski resorts. We want to know how they're doing every year. We want to look at national parks and how they're doing, because the national parks are such a big draw for tourism in the state of Montana. Airports. People do come in that way, and they have their counts that are very stable counts in terms of consistency as well as reliability. Amtrak ridership, that's another one that we look at. And then we're going to look at rooms that are sold in the state, whether it's hotel or bed and breakfast or resorts, how many rooms are selling every month, every year. And the daily room rate, we've looked at that a little bit, and we've noticed that it's, you know, not so good for us who like to go traveling around, but it's on an upward trend, how much they're going to charge. And then the spending, of course. We ask about their spending and where they're spending their dollars and what categories they're spending them in, so we can judge where it's going and where it's been.
And this is a statewide. It's not just in, say, a glacier country.
No, it's statewide, and it's kind of a fun project to always find out what these people are doing, where they're going, why they're here, and spending their money.
And you and your colleagues, when you sat down to analyze some of this data, you discovered some pretty encouraging stuff.
Yeah, it was a good year. 2% up is what our estimate is right now for the visitation. The spending actually went up a bunch more than that, and third quarter looks like it was up, and we had to look at it a few times because could it really be up 20% in quarter three when spending was our highest increase over the third quarter of 2012? So it looks like it is.
2% in visitation doesn't sound like a screaming jump in the number of people visiting.
No, it doesn't. But you know what? The way I look at it, it's the best increase from my personal point of view, because it's something that the state can deal with. I mean, think about it. If you suddenly had a 10% increase in the number of people here, I think residents of this state would say, that's it, no more, we don't want that. So a 2% increase, you can slowly work on the things that need to be improved upon or look at where are we impacting areas a little bit more than we should be, if that's happening at all. And it gives us that availability to be cautious but still have an increase and a growth.
And non-resident visitation, as you mentioned, is up quite
nicely. It is. It generally keeps going up. During the recession year, we had a little decrease in number of people coming in, but it bounced back. And we just keep on this trajectory of about 2% every year. Every once in a while, it's a 3%. Once in a while, we've had a 4%. But it goes up in a nice, acceptable growth.
Where are they coming from?
Besides everywhere, we've always had California and Washington be our highest group of resident, you know, where they came from. And what's interesting is Albertans have suddenly rose to the top in the numbers as our top visitation from that area over all the others. And so Alberta is unique. And this started once the exchange rates became equal. And all of a sudden, we weren't such a hardship on their wallet, and they started coming down, and they haven't stopped. And they, in fact, they've increased in their percentage of numbers of people. Now, they're right to the north of us. The other ones are Washington and California. It takes them a little bit longer to get here. They can come here in a weekend. So they're doing weekend trips. And some of it, people may not call it tourism because they're coming down and doing some shopping. And then they're heading north again. But most of them say it's recreational shopping because it's stuff that they want to do. And people like to shop. So they'll come down in the States. When you think about it, when you go internationally, it is fun to look at the different types of products, and whether it's food or actual clothing or whatever it is that they might be buying. It's fun to get it from somewhere else. And so I think that's what we're seeing, is a lot of them are coming shopping. And then the Glacier area and all along the High Line, they're coming down to do some of the activities that are available here.
But they've got Banff in their own backyard.
They do have Banff, and it's a beautiful area, but it's crowded. I don't know if you've been there recently. I've been up there in the last few years, and I thought it was crowded in 1983 when I was there, and now it's even worse. So Glacier, while it had a good increase this year, and it is getting more crowded, it's not nearly as crowded as some of the areas up in Banff and Jasper.
I was going to say, Glacier, July, August, oh, that's pretty crowded.
In our minds it is, isn't it? Yeah. We don't want it that crowded as a resident because that's our own backyard. But it isn't too bad when you compare it to other places that you could go to in July and August, and therefore it's very acceptable to most people.
Okay, this almost 20% increase in spending.
Yes.
What's going on there?
You know, that's a good question, because they don't really tell us why they spend so much more, but we can guess. We can look at the economy, and we know that people are more comfortable with their lot in life right now. And when you are comfortable like that, it's okay, one, to go on a vacation, and two, to spend the money on the vacation. We do see more spending going on in outfitted type trips, whether it's a short little one like a half-day raft trip or a fly fishing trip. So we're seeing more, and I expect this to continue, where they're spending money on experiences. They're spending it on those things that might be the red bus tour in Glacier, let's say, or the rafting trip or the fishing trip or a horseback riding that they haven't done before. They're starting to do that. And again, the baby boomers still rule in terms of how many, you know, that age group is coming more than any other age group to Montana. And if you think about it, that age group probably doesn't need a lot of stuff anymore. So the experience is what they're going to spend their money on. And we're starting to see that happen here. And I think we're going to see that continue for quite a while.
Gasoline, groceries, clothes, that sort of stuff is up as well.
Yeah. Gas, unfortunately, is the one they spend the highest percent of their dollar on. And then that's followed by retail sales. And retail sales hadn't been at that top of the list before. It's now there. And so they are spending more in that category. And restaurant and bar, they're spending a little bit more there. And then, of course, hotel, motel, or where they're spending their nights. And then groceries and snacks went up, I think it was 30% over the previous year in terms of where they're spending their dollars. So what's going on there? Are we getting more campers who have to spend more money on their own food type thing like that? Probably. And we do see from the Alberta side, a lot of people have purchased condos down in Whitefish Mountain Resort in the area because it worked for them monetarily. And so now if you have a condo, if you have a second home from anywhere, obviously you're going to spend more on groceries and snacks, and that could be part of it.
Speaking of the economy and growth and such, we did have a big 16-day government shutdown last year.
Yes, we did.
That had to be so tough on those communities that serve the national park areas.
It was tough, and you're right. You hit it right on. It definitely was felt in the communities by the business people who cater to the travel industry. And I think everyone said in our Outlook survey that we did that it would have been the best year ever for them, if not for the shutdown. So it was still a good year. But when you think about it, if you're a business person and, you know, September is going gangbusters for you and you're in this travel industry and you're looking at October and your reservations are good and you're already thinking in your mind what you're going to do with that extra money that you're probably going to be bringing in, and boom, all of a sudden it doesn't happen. I had talked to the one of the people at Zantara, and it's a funny way to say it, but he said, yeah, we're watching our revenues flush down the toilet daily in October when this was happening, because they were almost at 100% occupancy, and that had to be shut down.
But it didn't kill them.
It did not, and fortunately, the shutdown happened in October. If it were July, if it were August, that would have been devastating to most people, and they may not have been able to recover.
Okay, here we are, early January. Is it just ridiculous to start talking about 2014's outlook at this point?
It's never ridiculous. Of course, we don't know. We have projections. And when we do our Outlook survey, we ask the business leaders around the state in tourism, you know, what is it looking like? And they're very, very, very positive. 57% of the business said, oh, we are going to have a good year in 2014. And then we would ask, well, what percent increase do you expect? And it was surprising how many said 10% or higher. And now we asked visitation. I'm hoping that they read the word visitation and not just revenue. But they're very positive. Only 4% of all the folks who answered our survey, there was over 300 of them around the state, said that they thought they might have a decline in 2014. So it's going to be a good year. And at the national level, they're saying the same thing. Slow, 2%. It's our magical number in tourism, 2%. But at the international level, which doesn't trickle down into Montana as much, but the international, you know, 5-6% increase in international visitation from around the world into the United States.
So there's optimism.
Oh, there's absolutely optimism.
Norman Nickerson, director of the University of Montana's Institute for Tourism and Recreation Research. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide, there is a winter weather advisory in effect from 8 p.m. this evening to 11 a.m. tomorrow for the lower Clark Fork region and the Bitterroot and Sapphire Mountains. Tonight, expect snow. Rain is also likely depending on your elevation, with a chance of light freezing rain and lows in the 20s. Tomorrow, rain and snow are likely, with highs in the mid-30s to lower 40s. In central Montana tonight, it should be mostly cloudy, with isolated snow showers and lows 20 to 35 degrees. Wind gusts could reach up to 55 miles per hour. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy, with a chance of snow showers through the day. High should be 35 to 45 degrees, and wind gusts could reach up to 50 miles per hour in the afternoon. In southwest Montana tonight, it should be mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers through the night, and lows will be 15 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow, expect mostly cloudy skies. Snow showers are likely with highs in the 30s. And now for the editorial comments of Abraham Kim.
With the start of a new year, it's the season for new resolutions and making self-improvement goals. Looking ahead to 2014, if you're open to the challenge, I encourage you to go global. I do not necessarily mean take an overseas trip, but rather take the time to learn about and appreciate a new culture or a new country to expand your mind and perspective about how people outside the United States think, eat, and experience life differently. It will not only enrich your life, but also help you understand and value your own culture and your own upbringing better. Who knows, it may even change your life. Of course, what going global means will need to be customized to each individual. For some, it may be as simple as trying a new ethnic restaurant in downtown or attempting an exotic foreign recipe. For others, it might be inviting that international coworker or friend to a meal to learn about their unique traditions, family life, and cultural practices. Or perhaps it may be picking up a new book at the local library to read about the lives of people living in a different world. Recently, a friend of mine, Sarah, shared with me her shock and disturbance after reading the heart-wrenching biography of a North Korean defector named Shin, who was born in a squalid and bleak North Korean labor camp and spent the first 23 years of his life in this gulag. Written by former Washington Post reporter Blaine Hardy, it is a fast-paced nonfiction account of a young man's life of hunger and hard labor in a world devoid of any love and comfort. Ultimately, Shin goes as far as turning in his own mother to guards for trying to escape the prison camp and eventually watching her be executed. Shin himself finally escapes from the camp and North Korea to a new life in the United States and South Korea. But now he deals with the guilt of his troubled past and fights to save others stuck under North Korean oppression. It is hard to imagine that such a harsh and cruel world still exists today and how people can be reduced to nothing more than animals. For my friend Sarah, this brief but disturbing encounter with another world provided a greater appreciation for what we have in this country, our freedoms, our rights, and our blessings. Another friend of mine, John, a West Montanan businessman, recently took a risk and decided to go global by opening up his personal and professional life by volunteering to mentor a foreign exchange professional from Cambodia as a part of the Mansfield Center's U.S. Southeast Asian Economic Empowerment Training Program. Sponsored by the State Department, this University of Montana program gave John the opportunity to mentor a civic leader named Chuni from Cambodia about American business practices, management, and Montanan culture for 6 weeks. Through the course of this program, he developed an appreciation for Cambodia and a friendship with Chuni, who also took the big risk to leave his Southeast Asian home to receive training and expand his horizon in this foreign land of Montana. A few months later, John had the opportunity to travel to Cambodia to visit Chuni to learn about his life and work as a community leader and his country's turbulent history that it must rebuild from. There, John shared his expertise and lectured about entrepreneurship and Western business practices to local business, civic, academic, and government leaders. This incredible life-changing journey, opening his life to a new culture, a new people, and new friendships, completely changed his life's calling. And it all started with a simple decision to go global. Even as a cosmopolitan and experienced traveler, there's always room to deepen your international experience. This time last year, my wife and I stretched ourselves by investing our time to learn more about global human trafficking from a friend who was running a small nonprofit organization saving and rehabilitating young women and children from this horrendous trade. Although we had heard about human trafficking, we were unaware of the prevalence and severity of human suffering and darkness in this issue. We read a few books, such as former New York Times journalist Cheryl Wudon and Nicholas Kristof's Half the Sky, and World Vision President Richard Stern's The Hole in Our Gospel. These books opened our eyes and really changed how we looked at our world. We did not realize that over 27 million men, women, and children are enslaved in sexual and forced labor trafficking globally. This booming criminal industry earns $32 billion per year and impacts even our state of Montana. But in the midst of this human tragedy, what amazed us was the tremendous courage and hearts of activists, social entrepreneurs, and concerned common people who took great risks to go to the urban slums, the red light districts, and the most remote places of our world to save thousands from modern-day slavery and sexual trafficking. To share some of these stories, this April, the Mansfield Center will be inviting international organizations fighting human trafficking to the University of Montana to tell their stories of freedom and hope and share opportunities for people to get involved in this global fight. If human trafficking is not your issue, the Mansfield Center and the University of Montana will be having more exciting international forums and programs for the public this spring, ranging from Japanese art and Chinese political history to North Korean security relationship and Southeast Asian films. Stay tuned and check out our website. These events will be great opportunities to help you think more globally and be better informed citizens of our world. So stretch yourself this year. Go global and learn about a new culture or a new country. It may change your life. This is Abraham Kim from the Mansfield Center.
Abraham Kim is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.